another edition of the Philadelphia Sports Week podcast, Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News. We're all one big happy family now, right, Bob Brookover?
Woo-hoo, yay, yay.
I am joined by my colleague, my new colleague at the Philadelphia Inquirer, Bob Brookover, as well as Sam Donnellan, columnist at the Daily News. And we're going to talk Phillies. We are down here in sunny Clearwater, Florida, where the humidity has lifted. And I'm going to get my two expert panelists to weigh in on a variety of topics that I know nothing about.
Yeah, right.
First, we're going to talk about Kyle Kendrick. He signed a two-year, $7.5 million deal on the first day of spring training. And my question to both of you is this a good deal or a bad deal? Sammy.
I think it's a good deal because it allows them not to be – I mean, if they do find a suitor for Blanton or they decide to go another way in terms of dealing one of these guys for something, you know, they have cost certainty there. If they don't, they also have depth certainty in terms of – whether Blanton can hold up or not. So I don't see any big harm in it.
Yeah, I think it's a no-lose situation for the Phillies. I don't think it's not going to be the deal that puts them over that tax threshold. It's not going to kill them financially. So and it gives them insurance. And in this game, it's always to have pitching insurance. It's always good to have pitching insurance.
Devil's advocate, that's what they said when they signed Joe Blanton, but that was a three-year deal for $24-some million. Different situation here.
It's a much different situation. I mean, the Joe Blanton deal ended up being way over what Joe Blanton should have received, and now we have the hindsight of knowing that Joe hardly pitched last year, so it made it even worse.
Agree, yeah. Or disagree, Sammy? Kyle Kendrick, you look at the numbers; they're not that impressive. He doesn't have the stuff. He doesn't have the swing and miss stuff. But do we overlook the fact sometimes that being ready when called upon and pitching a boatload of innings without ever hitting the disabled list is a skill and a skill set that deserves to be rewarded unto itself?
It's certainly a trait. I don't know. It's a physical trait. I mean, and he's kind of developed into a guy, instead of worrying about jerking him around or moving him into the rotation and back out and stuff, that he kind of seems to have embraced that, and that's half the battle or more than half the battle. So, you know.
Brookie, you look at guys like Rich Harden, you look at guys like Brad Penny, guys who have signed $8 to $10 million 1 year deals. Would you rather have a guy like that, or would you rather have a guy like Kyle Kendrick who might not have their stuff, but at least is there when you need him?
Two things. I mean, you say his numbers aren't good, but he's coming off by far his best season.
I'm talking more his peripheral numbers.
Right. But he's coming off by far his best season.
3.14 ERA and 15 starts.
And I haven't done this, but I think if you did do this, if you looked at the other 30 teams in Major League Baseball, their number five starters, if you would say, yeah, I'd be very happy having him as my fifth starter. Mm. Almost not every team. There are some teams that you're going to find guys that are better, but pretty much the majority of teams you're going to find that, yeah, Kyle Kendrick, he'll fit in fine as my
and he's their sixth starter.
And right, and he's their sixth starter. And that goes to the point of a perfect world. If it's a perfect world and Blanton does perform again, that's a cheap piece to deal to another team. I'm not saying they would deal Kyle Kendrick, but that's if there's a bunch of teams out there that would love to have Kyle Kendrick as a 4 or 5 to stabilize things, and they've got a plethora of something or an extra of something that you need come late July or something, that's not a bad piece to
have.
Well,
if the Phillies had their druthers, I think Joe Blanton would be the one who would be going out the
door.
But in
that's
the future,
a harder thing to move.
Right. I'm segueing here, Sammy. Right. This is a segue. This is radio. Professional stuff.
Gotcha.
Watch out. Segueing into Blanton, he has been the subject of trade rumors. I don't think they're going to find a taker for his salary, especially coming off, you know, a season in which he only made 11 starts. But let's say there is a taker, and let's say they're offering to pay $4.5 million of his salary. Would you do the deal?
Would, if I was the Phillies?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would do it.
$4.5 million?
Yeah, I would. Probably for $4.5 million, I would, because you're still going to free up $3.5 million. You know, not that that's a large chunk, but, you know, it was so close last year, that tax threshold. Yep. They were just underneath it.
And they
so
could maybe, be within $3 million this year.
Right. Maybe that's the point that allows them to make a move. I'm not saying it'll be 100 pence as good as that, but maybe just the move that they need to make.
How about this? You're in the middle of the season. They both have done well and performed, and now you have the opportunity to get to make that move because he's only half the contract.
Yeah,
do you mess with chemistry there?
I mean, that's a take it as it comes. I don't think the Phillies are a team that will ever part with pitching depth during the season if they don't have to. Well, let's frame it this way. What would that number have to be 100%, 75%, 50% of his salary to make it worth trading whatever Joe Blanton brings you when healthy.
Halfway, or you were talking right now?
Right now and then halfway.
Okay.
I mean, halfway is tough to predict just because we have no idea.
Well, halfway means he's, you know, arguably $4 million. Okay. Then you eat $2 million if you get something back. See, at halfway through the season, it's not just a giveaway. Maybe you get something back because you're going to pick up two and you're going to give them a starting pitcher that has established that he's healthy.
There's way too much math going on.
Brookie is.
Let's move on. That's math.
I know you guys can't see because this is not a video, but right now Brookie looks like a 1957 Ford Mustang pulled over by the side of the road with his engine smoking. There's just all kinds of smoke and bad stuff coming out of his head. He doesn't like to think too hard.
Thinking overrated.
You're a wordsmith.
Yeah.
Not a numbersmith. Jim Thome, one or two starts. Now, I contend that this is completely unrealistic, that there's no way Jim Thome will ever play first base for the Phillies apart from some spot duty. Do you guys agree or disagree? I mean, Charlie's really optimistic about it.
I think we're going to see Jim Thome in April play some first base. I do. It provided he gets through here all right and they think he looks all right. He's going to play first base one or two times a week in April, you know.
And even with all the other options that they have.
Even with all the other options they have, Charlie Manuel wants him to play first
base. Oh, I know Charlie wants it.
And, you know, I think Ruben's ideal situation is Ty Wigginton plays there the majority of the time. But I think you're going to see it. I definitely think you're going to see it. Now, you know, whenever Ryan Howard comes back, I think their hope is May 1st. You're not going to see it again after that.
See, I'm not sure you can afford – I understand that he has done the pinch-hitting role, but I also understand he's been in the AL the most recently. And if you're bringing him in to hit the ball over the fence and to create strategies late in the game, I think he's got to see – a game in which he's got four at-bats every, you know, once a week or every 10 days or whatever. I don't think you can ice him eternally. He can't be Matt Stairs, I don't think. Even Matt Stairs got starts.
Keep in mind that Jim Thome has not played the field. He has not played
in
the field since 2007.
I think you have to roll the dice at least early.
Since he left the field.
Right.
But you find that out in April. I mean, I know the games count in April, but you still find it out.
Here's the question is, if you throw him out there at first base where he is in a crouch,
and
where
hurting.
He is bending over all the time, where that back is put into a position that it has not been tested in 4, 5, 6 years, aren't you risking causing an injury that limits him in the role that you actually brought him here for? I guess my question is, what do you really gain from Jim Thome playing 12 starts at first base?
Swinging the bat against live pitching. That's, to me, what it's all about. And that's,
well, to me, you gain a power bat in the middle of your order in April. You know, Wigginton has some power too, but he's had incredible power numbers over the last 40 home runs over the last 2 years, and you look at the number corresponding at bat. It's an incredible number of home runs that he has hit the last 2 years. You know, I will say this, because we saw Thome at pretty much every spring. We didn't see him a lot during the season, but he looks better coming into this camp than I've seen him in the Twins camp and other camps in the last couple of years. I think he looks in better shape than he's
said. He lost a few pounds.
So you don't think it's a risk?
Well, it's a risk either way to me, Dave. If you ice him, if he's sitting on the bench and he's getting, especially early, and he's not getting those pinch hit opportunities, maybe he never gets back. We've seen that too. We've seen a pinch hitter come in here, and because he doesn't get at bats for a while, gets
that guy
loses
was,
loses.
That guy was actually
edge.
Thome with the Dodgers when he joined that team. 3 for 14 with 9 strikeouts, I believe, in his pinch
hitter.
He's
hitting. Not. Yeah, I mean, it's a great point because he's never really been a pinch hitter. He's been a designated hitter, but that's a lot different than being a pinch hitter.
To me, the risk is not doing that because you want the reason he's here is to in September, October, November, whenever it ends, to make him that threat, and he's got to get at bats to do that.
Brookie, I'm gonna do it now, and we're gonna kick it off because you and I dealt with it all last season, 2 years ago. Dom sanity.
Dom sanity. There doesn't seem to be any Dom sanity this year going on.
I'm going to go out on the limb.
Well, let me finish. That's. I think that's a good thing for Dom Brown. I really think it's a very good thing. I mean, a lot of people have written him off, I think, and that's a big mistake to have written him off at this point because he's too young. And I've seen this kid play some tremendous games at the AA and AAA level, and I've seen his talent come through. And we've seen it at the big league in spurts, But I think this is, he would never admit it because it's not the kind of, it's not the way he is. But I think the pressure did get to him and the uncertainty got to him. And I think now he can take a step back and relax and just be a baseball player.
I'm predicting a severe case of Dom sanity sweeping through Clearwater, Florida at this time next month.
Really?
Yes.
Does he make the team in your prediction?
No, absolutely not.
So he starts at AAA?
Yes.
Is he on the team come down the stretch?
You know, that's looking into the crystal ball a little while.
Yeah, well, but we're predicting.
I think Dominic Brown has, as Brookie said, been severely underestimated, severely written off, when in reality, look at a guy like Brandon Belt with the San Francisco Giants last year. Look at a guy like Cameron Maybin with the Marlins. There's time after time, top prospects more often than not struggle before they find success. Maybin hasn't necessarily found the success people projected for him, but if Dominic Brown ends up putting Cameron Maybin numbers, as he
go look at Mike Stanton's rookie year.
Right,
and there were times where they benched him. There were times where he was 0-for-4.
Jason Hayward last year,
and Jason Hayward went through it last year. It doesn't always happen to your rookie year. Sometimes it,
right.
You know. So, that's what the game's all about, is struggling. So.
But there's a bunch of names out there that we're not saying look at because they were Don Brown and you never heard from them. Didn't again.
Yeah, sure. There's all example. You can find example of
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know what it was about him, but he did not look overmatched at the plate last year. He made contact. He drew walks. He has a good eye, and he has great coordination. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the one big thing the people who don't make it never find. It seems like they can never put the bat on the ball enough. And that really wasn't Dom's problem.
One of the things that maybe gets overlooked is that became his biggest problem and really has been a problem since he's come up is his outfield play, his defensive play. Right. He took a lot of bad routes to the ball. I mean, and you know, we'll see how it'll be interesting to see this spring training what he looks like in left field as compared to right field. Yeah, obviously, especially at Citizens Bank Park, left field's a much easier position to play.
And I think the defensive struggles, while clearly, I mean, the guy looks like Bambi out there running on ice when he was in the outfield, but how many times did it actually hurt the Phillies? And I think, especially when you're playing in a ballpark like Citizens Bank Park, where the outfield is not Petco Park, it's not Coors Field, I would live with Dominic Brown's current level of defense if he gives you 270
and
20 home runs.
And when he
was, do you agree or disagree?
And Raul Ibañez was not a great outfielder.
Or Pat Burrow.
But both of them were just fine playing left field for the Phillies.
When he wasn't a mess, too, let's remember early how those throws that he made from they were unbelievable.
One of the best throws I've ever seen was the first day he was called up to Lehigh Valley. He made a throw from right field to third base in the air on a line, threw a guy out. Hit two home runs, I think, in that game.
Yeah. They're correlated. I mean, he got tentative at the plate. He used to be, he was pretty aggressive when he was feeling his oats, and he was pretty aggressive in the outfield, and those Bambi moves weren't quite as noticeable. When everything went. He looked tentative at the plate. He had some half swings that were just miserable, and he looked like a mess
out
there.
Keep in mind, we're talking about a guy who posted just a few points lower batting average during his time in the major leagues than Raul Ibañez did over an entire season, and posted actually a higher on base percentage than Raul Ibañez did, and had 5 home runs in 200 some at bats.
Mm-hmm. One of the strengths in the minor leagues has been he takes walks when they're given to him, and he's always had a good OPS. And another strength in the minor leagues is he's been able to hit left-handers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. The problem is, I don't know when he gets that shot, and I think he needs a shot where, I know we have said this the last two times he's come up, but finally he needs, when he comes up, they need to say, look, this kid is staying in the outfield for an entire season, come hell or high water.
Well, I asked, toward the end of last season, I asked Ryan Sandberg, I said, I'd love to know what your opinion is of Dom and what you think would help him most, and his answer was, I think Dom needs to be in one place for a full season. It's something that hasn't happened the last 2 years. He has not been in one place. And maybe one place in this case means through July or through August. You know, maybe comes up in September. But I do think that would be good for him.
Well,
let's
not overlook what kind of team he's coming onto. He's coming onto a veteran-laden team with no other young guys, a few, but no other young guys like him. He's trying to maintain a team that expects to be in the World Series every single season. That's not the same as going to the Mets right now or going to some team that would have the patience to watch.
The Yankees found a way to work Robinson Cano and Brett Gardner into the lineup. The Red Sox found a way to work Pedroia into the lineup, Euclid into the lineup. Right. In hindsight, what do you do differently if you're the Phillies?
I don't know if I'm answering that question, but one of the intriguing things here is the youngest guy that is going to be here is the guy who's going to be playing left field.
Exactly.
And he, you know, and it's going to be fascinating to see what kind of guy, what kind of season John Mayberry Jr. has, because, you know, he had such a great season in the way they used him last year. But there was a point where they sent him down where he wasn't the.
In fact, that was his great season, and
he went down to AAA and something happened there. Yep. Where, I mean, I was told that they shortened his swing a little bit, and you know, they
he got down lower.
That was his legs looked different.
And that's somebody told, I think it was Sal Rendy, there, the AAA hitting coach, said, you know what, we watched him. We said, you know, there's some Gary Sheffield in the way you swing if you shorten your swing, and they started to see that, and we started to see it. I mean, those last 2 months were amazing.
Yeah,
isn't it amazing that the son of a major leaguer who can linger around with the best coaching in the world up until this point, and there's still nobody can figure out what's going to let him go until perhaps this.
Although
that's an amazing thing.
I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but I want to see him. I want to see him do it every day,
right?
Sure. Right. That's consistently the key again.
Because keep in mind, people love to rip on Charlie, and Charlie might have some faults, but I think he knows his personality as well or better than any manager in the majors. And I think he knew John Mayberry very well last year, and he picked out pitchers that he thought John Mayberry could excel against. And I don't want to take anything away from John Mayberry Jr. But let's keep in mind, just 2 years ago, just last spring, we were asking, you know, is this it? Is this the end of the road for John Mayberry Jr.?
Right.
You know, and it's not like he had a tremendous success in the minor leagues. You know, this was a 200 300 plate appearance stretch, you know, and the highway is littered with the carcasses of guys who have had good 300 plate appearance stretches.
Right.
That being said, it's going to be fascinating. I can't wait to see if he can do it.
Yeah.
The power was half his hits were extra base hits.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they needed last year, and again need this year, especially if the second baseman goes back to being
about the minor league stuff. He's never had that great. But that when they sent him down for that little bit of stretch, he stayed. That's where he started being.
Oh, he's clearly a different hitter. Right. And you could see, you know, he, like you said, he had shortened his swing. He was getting closer to the plate. He's such a long guy. Right. I mean, his limbs are as long as anybody's in baseball.
And he's a terrific outfielder too. I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
If he can be that guy in the outfield.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Jason Worth was a terrific right fielder, and obviously that translates to him being able to play center field. And Mayberry is that same kind of guy in terms of what he can do as a defensive outfielder.
He had 8 steals in 296 plate appearances last year. That, over the course of a season, is a 20-steal season. I mean, he's a 20 guy. What?
And he's a smart runner as compared to some guys who get steals, but they're not necessarily smart base runners.
Do they need him to be drastically better than Raul Ibañez's 250, 298,
they need him 20 to be, home runs? They need him to be less streaky than Raul Ibañez.
I think they want him. Yeah, that's a great point that they want him.
The number Raul could be the same as long as it's consistent.
Raul Ibañez's streaks were just so wild last year.
It was amazing.
Yeah, and I think they need more consistency out of him. You know, if you said he's going to hit 275 with 25 home runs, and however many RBIs that translates into, I think they'd say, yeah, we'll take that right now, because there's going to be there's going to be some doubles in there too.
Where do you hit him?
I'd probably right now hit him 6th.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I would too. But I'd also have Chooch up higher in the lineup.
Yeah.
See, that's a one that nobody's talking about. To me, Chooch really kind of looked worn down at the end of last year and didn't. I don't know if he was physically not right or whatever, but I'm very interested to see if he's 280, 290 this year or 230, 240.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, the guy did suffer a bruised testicle, which I don't think any of us
would admit to having suffered.
I don't think any
suffered.
Of us can empathize with that.
We're allowed to say that on radio.
It's my most vivid memory of the 2011 season.
That press conference with Ruben. We're in this hallway and outside the Phillies clubhouse, and we asked.
Oh, don't go in.
We corner Ruben, and Ruben sometimes is very evasive, and on this particular occasion, he was not evasive. He gave us the actual diagnosis.
He did.
And Zalecki said, should we write that?
But and we all did in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it's I just think you can write it was that. Probably one of the rare instances as a reporter where you received too much information.
Uh huh.
But
well,
anyway.
Kind of like George Brett's.
What else are you guys interested in looking at this spring training, rookie?
I think you were going to ask about what minor
league. Yeah, what minor league? Besides Dom.
And one, I look at so many over the year because it's one of the things I do. But one guy, because his story was so incredible last year, I'm interested to see how it continues, is Joe Savery.
Yeah.
It was just such a cool story. He led the Florida State. He was the hitter of the month in the Florida State League in April and the pitcher of the month in AAA by August.
Right.
I don't think that's ever happened before. Right. And
especially when he was drafted as a starting pitcher.
Right. So let's – I'm just fascinated to see where he takes it from here.
I mean, he looked good in that one appearance he had in Atlanta,
He's thrown 94, 95 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You know, if he can develop some kind of secondary stuff off that and he's going to be just a relief pitcher, he's going to pitch in the big leagues. Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's been through, to go to the whole Dom Brown thing and even Cole Hamels, who we talked to today, he's been through something that either knocks you out or makes you stronger. And he's, you know, he's in that position now where I don't think if he does take the mound, you're going to see a guy who's worried about what ifs.
One guy I'm curious about, just because of the Phillies' track record of having a guy like Jay Happ, having a guy like Kyle Kendrick, having a guy like Vance Worley step up, guys who were not necessarily top prospects on the radar at the time, is a guy named Austin Hyatt, who was at AA Reading last year. And same type of reports on him as were on Worley. Probably slightly less velocity from Hyatt, but not ridiculous stuff, not a tremendous fastball, but he does have one pitch that a lot of major league hitters lately have struggled against, and that's a changeup. And he's a guy who has always, he's one of these grinders that has always kind of had success at every level. And if you look at his strikeout numbers, if you look at his walk numbers, if you look at his ERA, even his innings and wins, and they're all there. Mm. And he's getting up to AAA time now, and I'm just curious to see if he might be a guy who gets a chance if a rash of injuries hit. Hey, you saw him last year. What are you thinking?
I actually did not get to see him at all.
I saw him once. I saw him pitch against actually Jacob Turner, who was the Tigers' top pitching prospect. And that dude is filthy. Jacob Turner, he is – write that name down because I'm not breaking any stories here. The kid's like a top 10 prospect in baseball. Right. But to see him up close in Reading Stadium was – I mean, he shut – he made Redding look like Redding, you know.
But Hyatt is definitely a guy that's been under the radar in their system, and and when the guy gets a AAA, it is a great challenge for these guys because, you know, you're dealing with hitters who are basically major league hitters,
right,
who maybe are on the downside of their career but have an idea of how to approach an at bat.
Yeah,
and it's the first time that in their careers they've really.
I'm just curious.
Those guys.
I can't believe we're leaving a 6'9". I know his name's been kicked.
You just like to
I
say
just
it.
Love watching it. I love it. It's not just the
just
saying
like all
it.
The L's
I just
and the P's
no. I just the motion itself.
You're communist.
Coming down.
Are you socialist?
Sam? Yes. Coming down that when those guys come from that hill from
he's
being
huge.
That tall and it comes down, it just has a such a kind of it's the one guy when he starts pitching out there.
Yeah.
I'll never take my eyes off just because I love watching one pitch after another.
Plus he's another great story and he's a great athlete. This is a guy Scott Matheson told me last year. He's got a 95 mile an hour slap shot.
Yeah, I'll bet he does. You know, I mean, he was
a hockey guy growing up in Canada. Yeah. Philippe Amont, by the way, we're talking.
Philippe
about.
Amont, right.
Yeah, he was a hockey guy, although he never really played organized hockey because he couldn't afford it.
Yeah. The question is the one time I saw him in Reading was the same night and ran into a couple close calls called against him by the umpire, melted down.
Yep.
You know, large part that was not a problem last year, but I'm curious to see him up close, especially since the last time he was in big league spring training really struggled.
He
might be one of those guys who never get there or get old. And then suddenly, just from a standpoint of age, he ages and he hits a button. You know?
They were trying to make him a starter then, too.
Right.
And he's obviously much more comfortable being a relief pitcher.
Yeah, but I'm –
I just like watching him throw. Maybe nothing ever happens.
I just want
to
see how much he really has matured in terms of his – not only attitude-wise and – I mean, don't get me wrong. He was never a bad kid at all. He was just, you know, immature. He just let things rattle him that should not rattle him.
Right.
And in large part, the reports were that was gone last year.
I want to see Tyson Gillies play because apparently that's a lot like Bigfoot. Nobody's actually sure that he ever has played.
There are
reports that he might have been out there. But.
I can attest. His first free trading, I witnessed it.
You did?
I actually did too.
Did you cover your eyes or did you keep your eyes open?
He gained notoriety that spring for doing everything but the high motor, shagging a lot of fly balls at full speed and, well, whatever. suffered hamstring injuries and had
his career. Played 30 games in his 2 years.
Yeah, they desperately like need somebody for that trade to...
Yeah, and Amont looks like the most likely leader of the pack. JC Ramirez got off to a great start last year and then fizzled.
And he's a guy whose clock is ticking, man. I mean, he's got one option left after this year, right?
He does.
He was 17, I think, when he entered the minor league system.
He just fell apart. I don't know.
Well, he looked good for that one kid, but that 1 week he looked really good.
Let's wrap it up here. Bob Brookover is getting antsy.
Rapping.
But I
if we don't wrap it up soon, I'm going to start rapping, and that won't be good for
anyone. I thought Cole Hamels was going to start a gangster rap war today when he was talking about being East Coast instead of West Coast. I was like, Tupac got shot for less than that, you know? Anyway, I want to thank Sam Donnell and Bob Brookover for being here on the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Sports Week, whatever platform you want to come up with a podcast.
This is great radio. Just call it great radio.
Break it down.
I think Brookie may have just had a seizure.
Peace out.
Anyway, back to you.
You can't get radio like that anywhere else. Thank God.
We are going to switch gears in just a moment as I play back for you an interview I conducted earlier this week with FoxSports.com baseball insider Ken Rosenthal. You probably know him best from his work on MLB Network and... of course, the Fox National broadcast. You know his face, you know his bow ties, you know his knowledge. And we are going to get Ken to share some of that knowledge with regards to Roy Oswalt. Where might he end up now that he is taking half of a season off? Joe Blanton, traded, not traded, opening day roster, no opening day roster. And, of course, Cole Hamels. What is his next contract going to look like? Who might be involved? Yankees, Red Sox, Dodgers, Cubs, somebody else? Mystery team, always a mystery team out there. Nationals, who knows? Ken is going to break all of that down with me. He knows a lot more about the sport than I ever will. He has been doing it forever. But first, really quickly, mostly because there just isn't a whole heck of a lot to talk about, we are going to wrap up this first week of Phillies spring training. Pitchers and catchers reported here on Saturday, worked out for the first time on Sunday, and now the position players are in. First, full squad workout was on Friday, and there's a lot of optimism here. Charlie Manuel meeting with Jimmy Rollins on Thursday to talk hitting approach. They would love to see Jimmy Rollins turn into a guy who hits 280, 290, gets on base 34% of the time, steals a few bags, scores a bunch of runs. Now more than ever, they think they need him to be that guy that he has not necessarily been at all times in his career. They aren't looking for 2007 all over again. They want to see last year with a little more average and a little more on base percentage, and I think Charlie Manuel would be thrilled. They just don't want to see him giving away at-bats, and they think he is where it all starts because it's at the top of the lineup, been here the longest. Team leader, veteran, got to talk to the big dog before the show starts is essentially what Charlie Manuel said. Jose Contreras trying to get back on the mound after offseason elbow surgery. He pitched a couple of bullpen sessions over the course of the week, and the Phillies remain cautiously optimistic, I think I would call it, with regards to Contreras' opening day roster chances. Other than that, not a lot going on down here. It's a veteran-laden squad that gets in here, does its work, and really doesn't put up too much fuss. Chase Utley, I should point out, was very optimistic in his press conference. Really shared a lot more about his injury struggles last year with that knee than he has ever before. You got the impression that it affected him last year, that it affected his power, and you got the impression that he thinks that is not necessarily going to be the case this year. Keep in mind, Utley still stole 14 bags without getting caught last year, still finished fourth among NL second baseman in on-base percentage and slugging percentage. So it was a down year, no doubt. Only hit .259. That is about 40 points below his career average. But he is still the most polished hitter in this lineup, the most veteran hitter in this lineup. And Charlie Manuel and Chase Utley both seem to think that he can still be that guy that hits those home runs, that hits for power, that puts balls over the wall instead of to the warning track. So it'll be fun to watch Utley's progress. Last year at this time, he was motoring around on a stool fielding ground balls. He is in a lot better physical condition right now. had a lot more productive of an offseason, and he's going to be a big key behind whether the Phillies offense can take a step forward instead of just treading water or falling backwards from last year's inconsistent performance. But as promised, let's head out to Ken Rosenthal. 2 days ago, I recorded this podcast just before Roy Oswalt announced that he would indeed be coming back at midseason. Ken, in his all-knowing wisdom, broached that possibility as we talked in the hours, 24, 48 of which passed in between the time that I recorded the interview and finally got around to cutting up the audio and producing what you're listening to right now. Ken, here's my question for you. What's going to go on with Roy Oswalt? Because everyone's asking me.
David, that's a great question, and I don't have an answer either. And I'm not sure Roy has an answer, because right now, there is no answer. He obviously wants to go to Texas or St. Louis. They obviously don't have either the financial or roster flexibility right now to bring him on. So the question becomes, will he play at the start of the season? And someone told me last week that he may sit out the start, come back for the second half.
Pull Pedro.
Could pull a Pedro. Now, it's not like him. He's a competitive guy. But if this is his desire, one of those two teams, well, that's what he's going to get left with. So it's going to be interesting to see. He's still an intriguing guy to a lot of people. I don't love him going to the American League and in the Texas ballpark. I don't love that idea.
No.
But he's still Roy Oswalt. So if he wants to pitch for someone else, Boston would love to have him.
And if you're Roy Oswalt and you see Chin-Ming Wong got a $4 million contract this offseason, I mean, there's probably some reason why you think you should be worth a certain amount of money. But
absolutely right. But that can, as you know, David, be a problem for players too. When they say, and this happened a few years ago with Jermaine Dye. This was the best example I can remember.
Yeah, I remember.
Garrett Atkins got $4.5 million from the Orioles, I believe. Jermaine Dye's sitting there. Garrett Atkins, really?
Yeah.
And some of the DHs who are still out there, I'm sure, are thinking the same way. But, hey, you want to play, you may have to play for less.
What about Joe Blanton? Do you think he's a member of this team on opening day?
I do. I just believe it's going to be really hard to trade him.
Yeah, who's
going to
take him?
It's the money, and I believe you wrote this about, well, yeah, you can trade some of the money, but it's still with the tax.
Yeah.
It's not an equation that really works. Now, if you match up salaries, maybe, but the other thing with Joe Blanton, from this team's perspective, I'm not so sure they won't need him.
Right.
More than they think they're going to need
him. And he's one of those guys that you don't really appreciate until he's on your team. I mean, if you look at his numbers, they're underwhelming. But when he's healthy, you know, he's a guy who can go out there and give you six innings, but also every two or three starts give you, you know, seven one run.
Absolutely.
Know?
Competitive guy. And right now, the fourth and fifth slots are not exactly occupied by Roy Oswalt types. So I can see him being with the Phillies, and I can see him being with the Phillies not just for financial reasons, but logical reasons as well.
But obviously, the biggest question on every Phillies fan's mind is Cole Hamels and his future. If he hits the open market right now, tomorrow, what do you think he commands?
He gets something along the lines of Lee, Sabathia, Santana, maybe a little bit less. He's not quite as accomplished as those guys were, but he's left-handed. And keep in mind, when he does become a free agent, if he does, in the class that he's in, he is, to me, by far the best. Kane is good, too. I just think,
you would resign with the Giants. Yeah, you would value Hamels.
But I would value Hamels because of the left-handedness. And listen, he's done quite a bit. So they're in a tough spot with him because they've given money to other guys.
Yep.
And now he's saying, rightly so, and I know fans get upset with this, but he's saying, hey, you did it for Ryan Howard, who was here, okay. You did it for Cliff Lee, who was not here, who you traded away. My turn.
It's funny you say that about fans, but this is the one guy, believe it or not, where every fan I talk to is just paying whatever he wants. You know? It's crazy.
When you have 3.1 million tickets sold before you have a single workout in spring training, it's a little different. And they're in a different position. Now, granted, they cannot pay everybody what they want, but this is an important guy for them because, hey, Halladay and Lee are getting older.
Oh, yeah.
And if not Hamels, well, then who?
Yep.
So he's in a very good position, put it
and,
that way.
And you got to think there's a reason why the Yankees are frantically clearing money out of their payroll and trying to get under that salary.
Actually, they're trying to get under for 2014. I don't know that they're as much a threat with him as the Dodgers under new ownership will be, as who knows where the Mets will be, the Red Sox, the Cubs. Listen, we know with free agents, all it takes is one. Someone will pay Cole Hamels.
Well, Ken Rosenthal, we need to thank you very much because I know it's killing you not to be Twittering or texting or talking to a general manager right now. You seem like you're going through a little convulsions.
Well, those twitches are just normal.
Ken Rosenthal, read him on foxsports.com. See him on MLB Network and Fox National Broadcasts. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, David.
And that's your podcast for this week. Thanks so much for tuning in, as always. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, suggestions, tell us how we can make this thing better. dmurphy@phillynews.com or holler at me at Twitter, twitter.com/@highcheese or twitter.com/highcheese, I guess. The screen name on all your mobile apps would be @highcheese. Big thanks go out to Bob Brookover, to Sam the Mandanellen, to Ken Rosenthal. Thank you for helping me fill these 45 minutes of baseball greatness. We will be back here in sunny Clearwater, Florida next week. For now, I am Dave Murphy with the Philadelphia Daily News, Philly.com, and all your multitude of platforms. Be there next week.